Welcome to The Rink, a hockey podcast by hockey bloggers for hockey fans. I'm James Tapley-Graylian along with Tom Luongo. This week, it's round one of the playoffs. One series is over, seven more to go. Who's going to win, who's going to lose, and, well, who's hanging on for dear life? Tom and I are breaking it down this week on The Rink. St. Louis Blues fans, we are very sorry. We were having such more, you know, higher expectations, and maybe it was just wishful thinking. This entire playoffs for me has turned into wishful thinking. But the St. Louis Blues ended their season last night. Vancouver swept them out of the playoffs, and I think that if anybody is to be blamed, it's basically Roberto Luongo. They just weren't going to get through him.
Yeah. Apparently, no. It was a very spirited effort by St. Louis last night, including 21 shots in the overtime period, which was just fantastic. I caught the overtime last night. Wow, what a period of hockey. And it's almost a shame that St. Louis had to go out that way. But it had the sense of inevitability that they weren't going to beat Luongo last night. And eventually Alex Burrow scored in the last minute of overtime, and they were doing a handshake.
Yeah. And there was... Luongo looked really good until, of course, you know, he looked like he was getting, like he was injured for a little bit there. And I didn't stay with the post-game chat enough on CBC to really catch. You were saying that basically he was pretty much exhausted at that point.
Yeah, Scott Oak asked him if he had hurt himself at the end of the second period. He said, no, I was just worn out and my legs were cramping up a little bit. So I'm sure he rehydrated during the break, and it worked.
Yeah, what I did see, though, was Jason LaBarbera looking scared. Oh, the look on his face.
Well, especially since St. Louis played such a great second period.
Mm-hmm. No, they were incredible in the second period, especially the end of the second period. It was absolutely taking control of the game. It was a phenomenal performance at the end of the second, which, of course, any team's going to be ready for you coming back to the third. And right. that was basically what Vancouver did was respond. And had they not, it would never have made it to overtime in the first place.
Right.
In which, of course, with about 18, 19 seconds left, Burrows puts in the game winner. Mm-hmm. What do you always hear? That's one that Mason would like to have back. Yeah, I think that one he would absolutely like to have a second crack at.
And, sure. But it is what it is, and frankly, for the St. Louis Blues, the team, the organization, hockey, and you know the middle of the United States, all of that, it's all good. Mm-hmm. You know, the story is all good, even though they got swept out. They played a very spirited series against Vancouver. They had really nothing to hang their hats on. The kids all grew up a lot in those four games. David Backes, Perron, you know, Barrett Jackman, all of them. I think there's a lot of good things to on the horizon for the St. Louis Blues, and so you got to give credit to the organization, Andy Murray, John Davidson, and the like.
Absolutely. And you know what was surprising to me was watching T.J. Oshie on the same line as Keith Tkachuk, and that was he looked so much younger than his age. I mean, it was amazing to me that how I guess. Just how Tkachuk was able to just stand up in front of the goal. They couldn't move him. They absolutely could not move that man. And I thought that he looked great out there considering, you know, like I say, his age, how some seasons he's on, some seasons he's off.
He's still not guaranteed points in the playoffs, kind of like, Marlowe and Thornton, amongst others. But, you know, there are times when Keith Tkachuk is very dominant in games where he needs to be.
But he's just, at this point, he's kind of that definition of the aging hipster in hockey, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Team USA is pretty much where he's going to be, and that's about it. You expect him to be on the team just because, and that's kind of about it, you know? Certainly fading into the later years.
I'll be very surprised if Keith Tkachuk suits up for the U.S. in 2010.
Yeah, and also, by the way, the third period of that Blues game, no penalties, and then in overtime, three penalties, including a double minor.
So, yeah, yeah.
You know, at least they were calling penalties and, you know, not putting away the whistles completely, even though there were maybe a couple of things they could have called here and there. It's, you know,
right.
It's still overtime in the playoffs. So.
Right. Well, you know, they called – no, they gave Pittsburgh a 5-on-3 the other night because they had to make sure they won. So speaking of Pittsburgh and making sure they won, that goal by Sidney Crosby was just pathetic.
Yeah.
You knew exactly – I mean, it's pathetic. I'm not going to go any farther than that to say I've seen many a goal called back for a whole lot less. Mm-hmm. And sorry, I'm just not buying it. So chalk it up to NHL Bush League conspiracy where we want certain teams to make it through and certain teams to not. Chalk it up, you know, chalk it up on that side of the ledger one more.
Well, they did call in that Vancouver game, by the way, they did call back – well, not call back a goal. They waved off a goal that the puck definitely crossed the line, but the save was made. The intent to blow the whistle question comes up, but at the same time, they basically shoved Luongo into the net, which seems exactly what essentially Crosby's goal was. You know, just carrying the buck in with his body rather than anything else.
Right. So. I guess, you know, if Sidney Crosby was playing for St. Louis, it would have been a goal, and they'd still be playing. I don't know. I'm not beholden to anybody. I can say I say the call stinks, and that's that. And yeah. I'm not surprised. So
the other big controversial goal, I'm pretty sure that you saw it last night. The game winner for Carolina.
Yes.
Incidental contact with the goaltender before the puck was shot. Which the best thing that I heard today on I listen a lot to XM radio and XM 204 on the Hockey Talk today. They were basically saying that the whole reasoning was that the bump for when he was bumped, he was out of the crease, which I don't see any reason these days for a crease other than to cause controversy.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened outside of the crease, and that it happened prior to the shot, so he had time to reset himself. And that was the whole reasoning behind no goalie interference.
That's exactly what Barry Melrose said in the ESPN commentary that they posted up this afternoon.
I don't know how I feel about him agreeing with Barry Melrose. Or
I don't either. But I mean, but frankly, if they're out of the crease, you know, if the goaltender's out of the crease and the guy who's posting up in front of him, he does have a right to a space on the ice, and this is one of the things that I for the most part, that's the position I for the most part agree with. I don't think that goaltenders are routinely given much wider berth for no contact than just their crease area. And as you said, what's the point of having the crease if there's no sharp delineation as to where the goaltender cannot be hit? We have the Sidney Crosby goal where he, you know, runs into Marty Brodeur on his way to kicking, basically pushing the puck in the net with his feet. Mm-hmm. And then we have Jussi Jokinen just trying to claim his space, you know, a foot outside the crease, and Brodeur pushed off and pushed up and out in order to try and draw the goaltender interference penalty. Mm-hmm. Don't let anybody kid you. And then he got himself set, and it doesn't matter anyway. Jokinen made a great tip. I don't think Brodeur, incidental contact or otherwise, was going to stop the shot. I mean, Jokinen made a nice tip of the point shot. Had he not tipped the point shot, of course, Brodeur would have stopped it. I'm sure G-Dub and company will disagree with me, but I have no
problem. One of the people on XM Radio today was G-Dub, and he says that it was a good goal.
Oh, okay.
He says it's painful to say, but that was a good goal.
Well, no, good. Well, then, okay, never mind. Good for G-Dub for taking off his Homer glasses for a minute. I'm not sure I would have been that generous.
You know what? Neither am I. I'm not sure you would have been either.
Nice.
So the series is tied up 2-2, Devils versus Carolina, and yep. looks like we're going to have a sizely amount of hate for the next game. I mean, the way that Brodeur reacted leaving, that was pretty good. That should mean something there.
Yeah. That was an expensive moment for Marty because his sticks cannot be cheap. That series is going 7 games,
yeah.
And I have no idea who's going to win it. I'm going to go with history, which is that generally speaking, the team that wins game 2 wins the series. Yeah. I think it's like 71 or 75% of the time, the team that wins game 2, regardless of how the series goes, whoever wins game two, that would be Carolina.
Well, here's what I'm going to say is that I'm going with history as well, and Carolina doesn't know how to lose in the playoffs, it seems like. When they get to the playoffs, they make the most of it.
They make it count, and they're really good in game sevens as
and
well.
The Devils
so the series does go seven.
The Devils have taken themselves out of playoff series plenty of times themselves. So even though they have plenty of cups behind them, three cups behind them, it's not there's history behind Carolina going deep too. So
I have to say both of these teams are good, solid veteran teams that have been there before. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of guys on both of these teams that have been there before. They've been through the wars. Going to be a dogfight all the way. It's going to be two junkyard dogs going at each other down to the end.
Ten games into the season, would you have ever thought that you would be saying that about Carolina Hurricanes at this point? I didn't.
No, I didn't. No, and there's an opportunity for where a coaching change worked.
Yeah. Well, right. At that end, of course, as you and I have both said, Eric Cole. Who'd have thunk?
Well, Jim Rutherford's got a really good track record of making great deals at the deadline now. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to look at it. Doug Whaton and Mark Recchi in 2006 mm-hmm. or 2005, whatever it was. And now Eric Cole this year. And I think he picked a couple of people up. I don't remember the cup run from – not the cup run, but where they lost to Detroit in the finals. I know he made a couple of deals that year, and I for the life of me, I can't remember them, but – he seems to have the magic touch at the deadline when he needs to. So, yeah. Or he's certainly not unwilling to pull the trigger and make a couple of big deals and give his team a chance to make a run. Mm-hmm. So,
and on the other flip side of the coin, again, on my wishful thinking list, Columbus Blue Jackets are about to get their butts handed to them again. And I'm sure they're going to lose the next game. I'm sure they're going to get swept out. It's not pretty in Columbus right now.
It would be nice for Columbus to score enough goals in the series to match the Red Wings' total in game one. So they need to get two tomorrow night.
So far, two goals, and both goals scored by R.J. Umberger, who, I would like to remind you, I said was a pretty damn good pickup for them.
Yes.
And that the guy was a playoff-scoring machine, considering what happened last year in
it seems that he raised,
I believe I said that at the beginning of the season.
So. I think you said that about every 3 weeks as the season went along.
I love saying his name.
I like saying smoked Umberger soup personally, but that's Campbell variety.
Hey, hamburger, give me an Umberger. No wait. actually, the sad part of the night is the highlight to me of the night for the Blue Jackets was Mike Commodore making a guest appearance in the Wings. Bench. He kind of landed himself in there, and he's a big guy. And when you completely when you were completely behind the bench, when you cannot be seen,
that's pretty bad. Pretty impressive. But again, like everything else, it's good experience for the Blue Jackets as an organization. It's like everything else. There's no shame in getting swept at this point by an obviously superior team that has a lot more experience than you do. The most experienced guy in Columbus really is the coach. Mm-hmm. Pekka and a couple other guys, but no.
Yeah. Did Hitchcock win a Stanley Cup? Has he ever won a?
Yeah. No, he never won one. He was awarded one.
Stop it. We're he was awarded that.
One. Just you, you know,
don't,
come on.
Don't
you,
even
you set him up. You set them up. I'm just making my point. Go on.
But with Columbus, hey, good for those fans though. They're completely absolutely back in their team. They're not getting. They're not going anywhere. But they are absolutely back in that team. They're having a great time. And I don't know if you ever saw that video. I think that the Columbus Dispatch put out of asking fans how the playoffs work, and nobody could answer correctly. Nobody could. I think that there's 20 teams. I think it's a best of five. The top ones get a bye. No, wait. It was bad.
That's awesome.
I'm gonna find a link and I'll put it up on the rink at our website, www.rinkpodcast.com, so it can be seen. Absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, that is funny. It really is. The Jackets are going to be better next year. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt. This should be the course kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, if they stick with what they're doing, they're nothing but success at this point. Eventually, absolutely, they're going to lose some people, stuff like that. But with the group that they have right now and the way that they're playing, there's no reason not to do it again next year.
and how quickly did Scott Housen turn this team around?
Pretty damn fast.
Really, really, really impressive job of turning that organization around after they got rid of Doug McLean. Why I have ever been a GM in this league, I do not know. it's all good for Columbus going forward. They've got the right, they've got a solid coach. They've got a good group of, they've got a good mix. They've got a Calder finalist for the goaltender and the GM who gets it. I don't see any problems. And honestly, the Central Division is tough this year. I do expect the Wings to finally start to taper off a bit. I don't expect, how many more years are we going to get top flight Nicholas Lidstrom? He looked horrible the first half of the season. He looks good now. Mm-hmm. But eventually, that there's going to be a reckoning in Detroit. They're going to have to regress to the mean eventually. Maybe not. Ken Holland's a wizard, but, we expect it at some point. So, good for Columbus as, these things rise and fall. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Sharks Ducks finally was starting to look pretty tough last night.
The Sharks looked bad. That was the best game that I saw. I watched, I think, most of the first and the second period. That was the best the Sharks looked in all the games that I've watched so far. I've watched parts of every game, and they, without a doubt, were challenging the Ducks and forcing them all over the ice. And but they looked bad at the end of the second period. I finally had to go to bed. It was it was just too late, and I was a little worried going 3-3 into the third period, and the Ducks really had control of the run of play. Mm-hmm. San Jose got out to a strong 2-0 lead or whatever, and eventually it wound up 3-3 at the end of the second, and the Ducks really had control of the second half of the second period. So I went to bed going, it's going to be interesting when I find out, did they win or not? And then Patrick Marleau got the game winner. Okay.
It's funny. Patrick Marleau gets the game winner, and also he starts off the game 17 seconds in, taking a double minor for a high stick.
Nice.
It's the total bookends and not how you expect him,
Yeah. Well, it's good. It's good for the Sharks that Marleau, we see a goal out of Marleau, and it's a big goal. It's a series saving goal, really. And it's the kind of thing that he and Joe Thornton need to step up. I mean, we say the same thing every year. Those guys have got to step up. If they don't step up, the Sharks aren't going anywhere. I mean, guys like Ryan Clough and Joe Pavelski and all their role players are great. And Dan Boyle had a big game last night, 2 goals. And you need those guys to step up and get the – and you need everybody, every large salaried individual. But yeah. San Jose's offense starts and ends really with Joe Thornton. And if he's consistently not capable of producing in the playoffs, then this team can't go anywhere.
No, you can't count on Rob Blake to get your first goal in every game. And that's, right. When Rob Blake gets your first goal and is the one who kind of sparks things, that's when, you definitely have to take a step back and say, wow, where are we not getting things done up front? What do we really need to do here?
Right. But realistically, and I say that at the same time, the Sharks did play a very, very good game, and Nabokov gave in a couple that he'd like to have back. He's definitely fighting the puck right now. Mm-hmm. So you have a combination of things happening. The Ducks are playing they're playing extremely tough in all ends of the ice. I think Eric McElhinney's discussion about the Ducks before the playoffs started, and he said, hey, their top four, Pronger, Niedermeyer, Malone, Beauchemin.
Right.
They're going to be hard. They're going to be tough to play against whoever they play. So that's bearing fruit. I mean, that's where it is.
Absolutely. It's just the thing with Pronger for me is that he keeps getting, he keeps going to the box. And, but if San Jose's not going to capitalize, then who cares?
Right.
They're basically just killing time till the end. Finally, they're capitalizing. They're, getting the job done a little bit. Was it the Pronger? No, it was a five on three. I'm not reading this thing very well right now, the box score, because I did not see the first goal thanks to the CBC cutting back and forth, and who are we going to go with, and going to the the St. Louis Blues overtime, which I'm sure is the right decision. Still, I felt like I was missing out on quite a bit.
Sure.
Including the mustache takes a fight, which finally. I'm sorry, I'm rambling a little bit.
Yeah, well, they got the San Jose's power play, which has taken a lot of heat so far for not producing, got them two last night, including the game winner from Marleau.
Right.
So,
this is what before, and those weren't, you know, they need to capitalize on those opportunities. And, you know, if Chris Pronger is going to keep giving them those opportunities, that's where, you know, that's where that kind of defense breaks down a little bit. They're just spending a little too much time in the box right now if they're going to make any kind of noise.
Yeah, not going to argue that point. So,
Rangers. Rangers Capitals. It's an interesting position because I fully expect Washington to come back and take over this series. I see absolutely no reason that being down by two games and now being at 2-1, I see no reason they can't do it.
And I'm going to bring up something that's very interesting. I was listening to WGR out of Buffalo, the sports radio in Buffalo, as I always do. Caught the last episode of Roby Radio for the year, so Mike Robitaille's hour-long show. And they were asking Mike, hey, okay, what are your predictions? And I think his predictions were Detroit, New Jersey for the finals. But he said that they asked him about, you know, potential Hart candidates or this or that, and he said, I'm going off the board on this one. If the Washington Capitals go anywhere, they will get there because of Varlamov.
Yeah.
And he will be the Conn Smythe winner. Now, he said this before the playoffs started. And there we are, game two, and Varlamov loses a game 1-0. And then shuts out the Rangers.
Yeah.
At the Garden, 4-0, 2 days later. So it's one goal, two games.
And what were we hearing the entire time? You can't put him in. You can't put him in. You can't put that kid into MSG in a must-win situation. It's just never going to happen. And it turns out that not being able to speak English has its benefits sometimes.
Yes, it does, because Sean Avery's trying to trash talk him. He can't understand
Avery's
the word of it.
Avery's trying to trash talk him. The fans, I'm sure, were trash talking him. You know, it's you're in the middle of it. It's just like, huh? What? Did somebody say something? It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
It is. Absolutely. It is absolutely beautiful. And apparently at the end of Game 3 it was interesting. I didn't actually catch any of Game 3. I was busy, but I had the game cast up from ESPN, and I noted at one point a shift in the middle of the second period where Milan Hristina credited with hit on Sean Avery. Not 10 seconds later, Nicholas Backstrom, of all people, credited with hit on Sean Avery. And then there was somebody else, I think it was Alexander Ovechkin, credited with hit on Sean Avery. It's like three times in one shift they took Avery to the woodshed, and he got called twice for goaltender interference in that game. And the last one, the second one, with like 4 or 5 minutes to go, he just, in the middle of a scrum, just punched Varlamov in the face.
Absolutely.
And got thrown out.
Which was the funniest picture I think I've seen in a long time.
Yes, it was.
It really, I'm so used to seeing him on the cover of, you know, or on the GQ stuff, and he's a model, all that. Oh, just the worst looking puss on that face I've ever seen.
I know, with, you know, his false teeth are out, so you know he's definitely not GQ man. Definitely not GQ material in that picture that led with, I think, every news outlet used that picture to highlight the game.
It was really funny.
It was hilarious. Brilliant. So kudos to the photographer.
And kudos to the Capitals. I mean, I want to see Washington win, and I want to see Jose Theodore fail. So, you know, they're making me happy.
Yeah.
But good for them for having the cojones to actually make the switch. That's when you're staring at the salaries of these two players, it's really hard to turn your back on the guy who's making the most money, and that's kind of the, you know, it justified or not. There's a cash issue when those things happen. We're paying this guy to stop the puck, and he's not stopping the puck. Do we put him in for game two? Just game two.
Right.
And
right.
It was a ballsy move, I think.
It was. I think we talked about it with Eric. We said, you know, if Theodore fails, will Bruce Boudreau have the stones to go with Varlamov quickly enough before the series gets out of hand?
And emphatically,
Emphatically, yes. So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Interesting. I think I saw a quote from George McPhee where he said, "Yeah, I was on pins and needles for that first game when we put him in that. He was not comfortable with the decision at all." But you know,
but it worked. I mean, it absolutely worked.
So no, it's great. It's a great story so far.
Chicago versus Calgary. I have not seen enough of this series, even though I like where it's going.
Yeah, you should like where it's going because it's really nasty where it is. I caught, about half of game three. Calgary finally got their mojo running about halfway through that game, and the Hawks did not respond very well at all, actually. Talk about a team that's exceedingly undisciplined. Rene Bork got hit with three slashing calls in about 25 minutes worth of game.
Wow.
And a lot of expensive lumber or graphite went exploded because of this guy. And that he's not the only one. I think somebody else, I think Olli Jokinen busted somebody's stick with a slash. I mean, it's like we can't help it. We have to call these. There's evidence on the ground, you know.
Right.
And yet Sidney Crosby still scores. And still that goal still stands. But it was nasty. Now, the problem, of course, was that by the time the Flames got into their worst phase of being really undisciplined, the game was already 4-1, and the Hawks only capitalized on like one of six power plays in the third period. Had they done so, had they really responded,
right,
they could have tied that game and sent it to overtime. They were given every opportunity to do so. So, I don't know. We'll see.
I like the fact that it's getting nasty. I don't like the fact that there's just so much controversy over the Havlat facial cross check. I can't understand why something like that isn't a suspendable thing, but a gloved punch by Lucic in Boston is.
Because Lucic plays for Boston, he's playing against Montreal. Just like Sidney Crosby plays for Pittsburgh and Marty Biron plays for Philadelphia. Mike Camilleri punches Havlat in the face off. The face off, no call.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel Carcillo gone for a game. Now, I mean, that's like saying Carcillo is any kind of angel or anything, and that the suspension wasn't, you know, warranted, even though he was warned on the ice and everything else. But come on, something has to be done with Camilleri.
Well, it's less so for me that where's this consistency? You know, I mean, a cross check to the face. I mean, when you break your stick with a cross check over somebody's face, you should be gone for a game. And turn around and not see that happen, it's absolutely ridiculous. That's one of the things that I'm absolutely over at this point. Yeah, and I know that you are as well. It's just I would like to see a little bit more consistency in these in the suspension area. And you know, if you want to send a message to the players that this is not going to be acceptable, then you have to show them why it's not going to be acceptable.
If you're going to be the adjudicator of justice, then you have to apply that hand evenly. If not, you are a joke.
No, absolutely. And it's almost like when Don Cherry was coming back and saying, you know, in the whole Alex Ovechkin, you know, celebration thing, one of the things that really struck me what Cherry said was, these people don't know hockey. I do. And it's almost like Colin Campbell's trying to say the same thing, that, you know, you guys don't know what suspension-worthy thing is. I do. Well, I think we all do at this point.
I got news for you, Nikolai Machiavelli. You don't, okay? Sorry.
And we will try and put a link up to Wikipedia as to who Machiavelli is, for those of you who do not know, on our website, www.ringpodcast.com.
Right.
All right, last series, Boston-Montreal. Montreal is a dead team skating.
Dead team skating, no Markov, no Schneider tonight, no transition game.
They're going with Boston Price on again. The prowl.
Boston on the prowl.
Yeah.
Montreal can hang with Boston for 15, maybe 20 minutes, and then Boston just skates them into the ground.
Absolutely. Their final opportunity to actually make a goaltending change, even though if they're, you know, going into next season, I'm sure that they're still going to be riding Carey Price, but essentially for this series, they're just riding him into the ground. There's not really much he can do when he doesn't have anybody in front of him like this.
No, there really isn't. And they're outclassed, they're outgunned. And as I said to a friend of mine the other night, you know, they might win a game. And he said, blasphemy. Boston must win every game. I'm like, well, okay, fine, be that way. I don't see it, but you know, they could eke out game four, but there's no way they go back to Boston and win another one.
Did Boston win in their series last year?
No, Montreal won last year.
So yeah, but did they win a game? Was it a?
I think it was a six. I think it was a six, wasn't it?
Okay.
I think it was either five or six.
Last year, of course, the Montreal Canadiens fans, or at least some of them, to be fair, rioted. This year, I just don't see anything. I don't think there's going to be any kind of riots in Boston.
No,
for beating Montreal. Although, I hope they tip back quite a few because finally, I've seen. I saw Boston fold to Montreal in a Game 7 situation a couple years ago, and it was Raycroft was in
that. Right.
And just such high expectations, and then to go down and just basically by playing the sweaters rather than the players themselves.
Right.
You could just see it happening. It was sad.
Well, it's not happening this time.
No. No, it ain't.
And Lucic will be back, and Lucic will be angry.
Good. That's how you want him.
Exactly.
Was it arrived to the front of the net with speed, the puck, and a bad attitude? That's
someone is going to lose their head in game four. I just expect it. And it'll be interesting. It should be the last game. I think that Mike Komisarek plays in a Montreal Canadiens sweater. He's an unrestricted free agent, so he's free to come play in Buffalo if he wants. That's that. So,
all right. Well, Tom, I was going to get into it a little bit with you about Lindy Ruff keeping his job and Regier keeping his job, but you know what? I have a hockey game that I have to get to. Kalamazoo Wings, the new quote unquote IHL, not the real old school true big IHL, but the unfortunate six team IHL. So I have a hockey game I have to go to, so we will just have to get into it at another time.
We all have plenty of time after the playoffs are over and we approach the draft.
Excellent. I think we could probably do a 2-hour special edition.
I don't think anybody wants to listen to it, and I certainly don't think you want to. I think by the end of it, that'll be the last episode of The Rink, because you and I won't be on speaking terms by that point. So it's fine.
All right, Tom, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care, bud. Enjoy.
That does it for episode number 30 of The Rink. The Rink can always be found at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find out about subscribing to us on iTunes, check out our Twitter feed, or see the links to some of the things we talked about in this episode. We're happy to have you email us. That email address is rink@rinkpodcast.com, or you can call us. Just pick up the phone and dial 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.